Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 5 issues for just £10. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today.
Hello and welcome back to The Critic Podcast. I am Ben Sixsmith, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Ellen Pasternak. Ellen Pasternak is a writer for The Critic, and she's written a piece called Stand Up for Karen. Ellen, can you tell me how you became, and I'm putting this in air quotes, a Karen?
What happened was, essentially I started telling people off on the tube for playing TikTok videos out loud. I moved back to London in January and started to notice that people, like quite a lot of people were doing this, and I thought it was really strange. It seemed like a really antisocial thing to do, and I really had the impression that when I was growing up in London, that wasn't a normal thing to do. I mean, that might be because people didn't have smartphones, but even so, it seemed like a new social norm. People seemed to be doing it without any sort of trace of embarrassment or shame, and I was surprised by that. And it just sort of started to annoy me more and more. I think it wasn't so much the noise, which is annoying, but also just the fact that people were being so obnoxious and didn't seem at all embarrassed about it.
Because, yeah, I mean, back in the day, we had, like, Walkmans, we had ways of playing music, making noise, and it doesn't feel like it was such an issue. Like, there was something in people's heads that would lead them to be more cognizant of their surroundings.
Yeah, it seemed like people have sort of given up on the idea that you have to have headphones to be allowed to listen to things in public. Yeah, and it just sort of occurred to me at one point that it's easy, if you're on the tube surrounded by strangers, it's easy to sort of imagine that everyone around you is just part of your surroundings, really. But it sort of occurred to me that I'm an individual, this person is an individual, they're behaving in a way that I dislike and I would like them to stop or change it, and I can just say so. So I just kind of started doing that and found that it was surprisingly effective. People would usually be like, oh, sorry. Most of the time people would stop, but a lot of the time people would sort of argue back that, oh, you know, you can barely hear it, it's really quiet, it's on low volume or something like that, which suggests to me that I was right, that it's a changing social norm, that people sort of assume that they have a right to...
Yeah, people are surprised to even be called out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people are mostly really surprised.
And why do you think other people are reluctant to comment on it? Because one thing I'm sure about is it's not because nobody else is annoyed. Like, I often see
definitely.
People online...
Yeah.
Writing
people
things like, so there's someone idiot on my tube, or there's some idiot on my train making noise.
I think there's quite a lot of factors. I think the main thing that comes up when I've sort of told anecdotes about this is that people are afraid to get in a fight with someone. They're afraid that someone's going to react aggressively, is I think the main thing. But I think also... Well, there's a few things at play. I think one is that it's a bit of a mass action problem. If you think that whatever intervene and it's just you that's sort of complaining against it seems like there's no point if you're the only one that's going to have an issue and going to say anything. Versus if a norm is in general strictly policed and
then everybody feels like you feel like everybody's behind you.
Yes, it feels like you can uphold the norm because it's close to being upheld anyway. And it sort of occurred to me that the previous social norm that you have to use headphones if you want to play videos out loud is only there sort of, it's not magically sustained by itself, it's sustained by everyone kind of agreeing on it and I guess policing it as well. So I thought if I believe that that should be the norm... but I'm not prepared to confront people who break it, then how do I think that norm is going to stay in place?
Because it has to start somewhere.
Yeah. But I mean, any sort of social norm requires some kind of consensus and some kind of consequence if you break it. If there's no consequence, then people will just break it, and then, it's a fragile thing.
And when you did comment to people about things they were doing that annoying, did you have any sense of other people standing behind you, or was it people looking the other way and shifting and pretending they didn't hear you?
Mostly other people around would ignore it, but there was one time when I got like quite aggressively shouted at by a couple of men, and that some Some middle-aged man was sort of quite determinedly, awkwardly ignoring it for a certain point until he sort of turned around and went, "There's no need to swear." So I guess he was on my side to a point anyway.
But he was only on your side up to when it became absolutely necessary to step in.
I guess. I mean, I think speaking of social norms, I think there's a very strong social norm against sort of speaking to other people on public transport in general. Mm. It seems quite a strange thing to do. So maybe I'm being antisocial in my own way, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't think so, because I'm sure that in everybody else's minds, they were also, at least they had some kind of, oh, what are they doing this for?
Yeah.
But they just suppressed it under this level of...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that annoys me more than it annoys other people. I think I'm quite sensitive to annoying noises, but I think it also annoys me because it's something I'm thinking about, and I'm thinking like, oh, this person is so obnoxious. Yeah.
So apart from kind of fear and just kind of general British awkwardness, why do you think people are reluctant to step up and intervene, or even just help someone who is intervening, even just kind of add moral support?
One thing is, I think that people don't really believe that it's sort of their role as citizens to enforce things or sort of care about the running of things very much. I think there's a bit of a sort of belief that the state should do things for you, including enforcing interpersonal disputes. And I think that's also related to, I think there's like a really strong sort of taboo against judging behaviour as like good or bad. I think, you know, everything's relative, so who are you to say that just because you don't like someone's behaviour, it's wrong or selfish or they shouldn't do it? I think it kind of, the two kind of tie together. There's this, I think people are reluctant to believe in sort of a common morality that you can point to and say you're being selfish or something. I think instead it's more about common rules and laws. So I guess that's the only kind of backstop. You can only say that's against the law in a way. You can't just say you shouldn't do that because that's judgmental.
And even sometimes when things are against the law, I mean, I remember when someone posted a photo of someone like openly doing heroin on a train.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were criticising them. And I mean, granted, maybe posting a photo of someone isn't the best way to police that norm.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I mean, there are probably kids on this train, you know, whatever kind of sad situation someone's in, there are probably limits.
I feel like if someone is in that sort of position, then it's not... Anyway, never mind. But anyway, yeah, I think there's quite a kind of like wider taboo against blaming people for bad behaviour. I think it kind of starts from a good place, which is sort of increased sympathy for people who are in some way like the underdog or some way like
disadvantaged.
Outsiders. So if someone is an outsider because they're, you know, they're behaving badly or they're like committing crimes or they're in prison or whatever, there's this feeling that you shouldn't judge them until you've been in their position, which is fair and it's admirable, but I think that's sort of morphed into understanding you should understand where they're coming from and their behaviour might be caused by things that you're not aware of.
Somebody playing TikTok, it could be like the only way they can express themselves coming from a disadvantaged position.
So I think there's this taboo against sort of the moral absolutism of judging someone's behaviour to be bad in the first place. But I also think that even when someone is behaving badly in some way, there's a taboo against sort of blaming or criticising them for it. I think that starts from an admirable place, which is the sort of understanding that people might do bad things or things that you consider bad for all sorts of reasons that you're not aware of. They might be disadvantaged in various ways. I think it's sort of almost like a sort of Oliver Twist view. You know, he's part of this gang of criminals, but actually he's
got a heart of gold.
Exactly. So there's this there's this sort of increased awareness that that can be the case, and the idea that you shouldn't judge someone until you've been in their position, which is fair enough and admirable. However, I think it's morphed into this assumption that people only behave badly because of disadvantages that they have. I think that means that it's very difficult to express anything that's critical, really, of people's behaviour. And I think that it's easy for people who are very conscientious to forget that there's a spread of conscientiousness. Some people some people really care about following the rules, and they like really, really wouldn't want to behave selfishly or annoy people around them. And I think other people, for whatever reason, just don't care as much. And I think if you're a very conscientious person, then you might sort of, in a way, it's a bit of a sort of failure of empathy or mind reading, that you, because you're very nice and sort of helpful, whatever, you assume that for someone to be behaving in a way that you wouldn't yourself, you assume that, you know, they must have a really good reason that, like...
Yeah, because otherwise they would be being conscientious.
Exactly,
like a normal person.
Yeah, and I think it's the assumption that they would be doing it for the same reason that you would, and I think it's often said that conservatives are operating from a better model of human nature than liberals, and I think that's probably true in this case.
That's true, and I think we can also, sometimes we can judge an action without necessarily judging the person behind it too
harshly. Absolutely.
I mean, it's fine to say, you know, you're in a really sad place in life, but there's still no excuse for doing this.
Yeah, or even you can sort of have a real problem with someone's behaviour without judging them as a person or wanting to punish them or anything. I think a very good example of this is driving, because you sometimes see, you see people get sort of shockingly little punishments for like injuring and killing people with very reckless driving. That's the kind of thing where I think some people are just temperamentally not fit to be trusted with a car. They're not conscientious enough, they're too reckless. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter why that is. You don't really need to want to blame them or punish them, but the sort of right thing to do, I think, to protect everyone else is to say, you've shown by this action that you're not fit to be trusted with a car, so you can't drive anymore. Instead of this sort of assumption that people can sort of get away with things again and again, because it's assumed that,
and also
sort of failure to appreciate that like people have different temperaments.
That's true. And also with what you were saying about how you're not necessarily judging the person, I mean, if we say you shouldn't do that, that doesn't mean I'm saying you can't do all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, on the driving example, Arthur Koestler, the novelist, he was one of the worst drivers in the world. Apparently, he totaled four cars and was constantly speeding.
Yeah.
So if you say, you know, Arthur, you can't drive again.
Yeah.
You're not saying, but you're a useless human being.
Absolutely, yeah. And it doesn't really matter why. I mean, it's similar with the whole debate about prison sentences for violent crime. To a certain extent, you don't need to want to punish someone. You don't need to wonder why they did it. You can just want to protect other people from doing it again. But I think there's this sort of lack of conviction in our own sort of ability to judge anything as good or bad.
And let's tie it back into the tube. I mean,
if
someone's being disruptive, then you can think, well, you know, maybe this is coming from a place of hurt.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. But, you know, maybe the effect they're having on someone else theoretically could also be seriously intimidating or stressful. I mean,
definitely.
For most of us, it might be a mild annoyance. But if we're gonna have this kind of expansive empathy, then it has to take the people it affects and not just the people doing something. Do you think social cohesion is clearly going down and antisocial behaviour is clearly going up? Or is there an element of kind of hype behind this?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It definitely, I think there seems to be a bit of a consensus, maybe among conservatives, that trust and cohesion are declining. But I think that's probably something that conservatives have always thought. It can possibly be explained by sort of noticing negative information in your surroundings more and maybe having a bit of a rose-tinted view of the past. Just because it feels that way to a lot of people, I don't really know the data to be able to say whether it is or isn't. I think there's probably lots of different things you could measure. Some of them might be going down, some might be going up. Obviously, in many ways, our society is much less violent and more peaceful than it has been at many times in the past. So I wouldn't rush to say that social cohesion is definitely really low or going down. But it does seem that it's
it's lower than it could be.
So it does seem that it's lower than it could be, and that social trust and cohesion is something that we ought to sort of actively think about conserving, because it can vary. if you think about different cultures around the world. So anecdotally, in Singapore or Japan, people can sort of leave expensive belongings around and they completely trust that still going to be there when they get back. I mean, that's just anecdotes. Not having lived in those countries, I can't really say for sure, but it does seem like it's something that can vary. I do think that we ought to actively think about preserving social norms, because otherwise you would expect them to sort of decay by entropy if people sort of act antisocially and then don't face any consequence for it. Then you might expect to the stable state of being in a high trust society would be ruined.
What would you say were the best reactions and the worst reactions you got when you were telling people off, as it were?
I mean, probably the most common reaction and the best reaction is if people just say, oh, sorry, and then usually turn the volume down really, really low or off. Yeah, and then the worst would be, I've already said that there was this pair of guys who got really aggressive. I didn't actually feel in any way threatened because it was a really crowded tube carriage in the middle of the day, and I just thought it was strange more than anything else. And there was also, I ended up getting really, really frustrated and drawn into this argument with this sort of pair of schoolboys who would keep saying, like, oh, well, it's really low, and if you don't like it, you can move further down the carriage. But like, the thing that really frustrates me is actually, before I started talking to people about this, my most common reaction would be to just move down the carriage. But very often I'd go and sit somewhere else and someone else would be doing the same thing somewhere else. Yeah. You can't escape. Yeah.
But how can we... Is there any way we can kind of instill a broader courage and a broader conscientiousness? Because, I mean, it's an extreme case, but two guys swearing at someone on the tube in the middle of the day, and it's a crowded carriage. Yeah. I mean, why wasn't the whole carriage reacting to it? So is there any way we can encourage people to, or enable people to, stand up for what's right a bit more?
Yeah, it's difficult because I think it's a bit of a mass action thing. I think, it slightly contradicts what I was saying before about how people have too much of a belief that the state ought to step in and solve their interpersonal disputes. But I do think that there's a role for more... top-down enforcement. For instance, there was, I think in a few months ago, there was a man who was fined for like playing music really loudly on the tube. Granted, I think that was, you know, music from a really loud speaker rather than a little tinny TikTok video. But even so, I think the sort of structures and culture of a pro-social culture feed into each other. Because I think, but if you, I guess... rules existing and being enforced sort of increases the sort of group confidence in that norm. You know, there's more confidence to be able to say, we've all agreed that this is wrong and you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It's not just you who thinks that. And also, I guess, as we were saying before, if there's more enforcement generally, then people feel sort of more confident to say something themselves because they're backed up not just sort of morally by consensus, but well, there's probably going to be fewer people breaking it in the first place, and also
they feel like the state is going to stand behind them if there is an unpleasant situation,
and that, you know, other people might step in, and that they're not going to be retaliated against. And I think that's why I think that probably a kind of more pro-social culture and a less pro-social culture are probably both sort of they're both probably kind of their own stable states. So I think the pro-social culture is self-reinforcing in that way, because the more conviction there is in a norm, the more people feel that they have to stick to it, and also the more people feel that they can enforce it, and so it sticks around, and then it can probably tolerate a little bit of disruption and probably self-correct a bit. But then, I guess, if you get to a certain, you know, if you get to more disruption than that, then it might move to the other stable state, which is less pro-social, and then it's hard to move back without some kind of input.
Yeah.
Like, actually actively shifting it in one direction. I've noticed that it seems that on public transport lately there are quite a lot of sort of signs telling you to sort of behave yourself, which I don't remember there always being. So I've seen lots of signs sort of explaining that you can't travel without a ticket. That's really, like, I don't remember there being loads of those when I was younger. And also signs saying abusing our staff is unacceptable and we'll push for the highest possible penalty. And anyway, it seems like they're trying to do this kind of thing. But in a way, it's a bit depressing, the idea that people need to be told, you know, that they'll be like, oh, okay, I didn't realise I wasn't allowed to abuse the staff. Okay, then.
Because there must have at least been a norm where they thought, this isn't such a serious thing to do. If you need to remind them so much.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That kind of assumes that the signs are effective. I don't know to what extent people do that kind of thing because they think it's okay or because they don't care. But I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's true. But if you have that kind of collective and state backing behind it, then even if someone thinks it's right, they're going to be intimidated to not do it. But I mean, I often think, obviously violence against staff is an extreme example, but I often think maybe people don't have a very strong moral code because they're not conscientious enough to see their effects on other people. But if they were made more cognizant of those effects, they would be able to internalise it, at least to some extent.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't just be like, oh, I'd love to play my music really loud, but I might get in trouble. Yeah. But they'd be like, maybe I should just get some headphones.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the ideal if people don't do it, not because they would get in trouble, but because they think it's rude to other people. Yeah, and I guess that's when it becomes self-reinforcing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. And I wonder if there's also an element of people not just feeling like a kind of atomized individual, they don't know their effects on people, but sometimes it's almost like I want to project myself as an individual. You know, I want people to be aware of me.
That might be true,
And that's also worth slapping down. It's a too strong phrase. I don't know why that came into my head. That's also worth reminding people that they don't have the right to impose their preferences. Yeah.
I wonder if part of it might be because if you live in a really big city, it's very anonymous, and it's very easy to think that the people around... It's easy to forget that the people around you are also individuals. You'll probably never see them again in your life. It's quite easy to see them as sort of the background of your tube journey. And I guess because of this anonymity, there's no need to preserve your reputation, which I think is probably quite a strong promoter of pro-social behaviour in smaller communities.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because if you're going to see the same person every day, they're going to think badly of you. And if you see some random person on their way to Victoria Station,
who cares if they think badly about you? Yeah.
True. Although, I mean, also, we were talking about how people are nervous about commenting from a sense of other people being disadvantaged. But, I mean, antisocial behaviour tends to affect the disadvantaged worst of all. I mean, I was talking about people who could be sensitive on the tube, but I mean, littering and the use of illegal drugs.
Yeah.
Generally, if you've got money and you come from a good background, you can kind of insulate yourself away from it, apart from when you have to go on the tube at rush hour or something. Whereas people who are really disadvantaged and want to be pro-social, they don't have a choice. They're stuck. So there needs to be more kind of collective action and state action on that as well. What would you recommend to someone, though? If someone was in your position where they were in public and there was something that was irritating to them, would you, because you were talking about how we need more kind of structural action, but would you recommend the individual action as well, or do you think it just depends so much on context and circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to recommend someone to do something that then they get stabbed. Yeah. I don't want that on my hands, but I do think that that in general, it's much more okay to just, you know, politely go up to someone and say something to them than people assume. It's almost a bit of a hack because it's such a thing that people don't very often do. But
So maybe the safety concern is something you should bear in mind in context. But the kind of moral concern, I shouldn't say something because then I'll be a bad person, is something people should transcend, maybe.
Yeah, and kind of also, in a way, who cares if someone thinks you're a bad person? If you already think they're being selfish, you think that you're right, it doesn't really, let them think that you're annoying. Who cares?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Sometimes yeah. in situations, not everybody yeah. can be happy, and that's just life.
True.
That's just life. That's true. Ellen Pasternak, thank you very much.